weekly pulse on all things green and gold with the three-time Wisconsin sports writer, the great Jason Wilde. I'm Alex Strofe with you. Packers 2-1, getting ready for their first divisional matchup against the Minnesota Vikings this Sunday at Lambeau Field. You don't look very enthused today. Are you not having a good week?
No, I'm fine. I was thinking about titles. I was thinking, what about off schedule?
Yeah, I mean, that would describe us well.
Right? Yeah. Off schedule plays. Off schedule podcast. Off schedule feels pretty appropriate.
That does feel.
What is this? Our fifth episode?
This is episode 5. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Good to know.
Good to know.
Feels like more.
That tells you how sick you are of me already. But nonetheless, you still showed up, and that's all that matters. Big one this weekend, Jason. Minnesota Vikings 3-0, Packers 2-1. They win two games with Malik Willis. Let's start with the big question, though. Is Jordan Love going to play?
That was the question that Tom Silverstein asked Jordan Love, the first question out of the chute yesterday at his locker. Actually, it wasn't even a question. It was more of a command. Just tell us you're going to play. which, of course, Jordan said, am I playing? It's day to day. We'll see. The way I described it was last week he felt like a guy trying to sell the bluff that he might play. On Wednesday, he felt like a guy trying to sell the bluff that he might not play. Like, there was just a totally different vibe and tenor and demeanor. And I mean, I think he's excited to get back out there. I think he's really excited that they were able to go 2-0 with Malik Willis at quarterback while he was getting back to somewhat full health. So I can't say with absolute certainty he's playing. Like, he could have woken up this morning after yesterday's practice with a big swollen knee that's really bothering him, or that could happen today when they practice theoretically in pads. But he feels to me like a guy who expects to play, wants to play, and plans to play on Sunday in a very big game at Lambeau Field.
So you've done this a long time, Jason. So you know a lot better than I do, or you know everybody watching this for the most part. What do you look for when you're looking for a player to return? Is it Friday being a full participant? Is there a way you evaluate the injury report going into the weekend, thinking, you know, this is how we can tell whether or not a guy is going to play?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he'll still probably be listed on the injury report as questionable, just a CYA type deal. But yeah, it's a feel thing and it's hard to really describe. But I'm not always right either. Like, there have been times where I've been fooled. But I was right on this, but that's not a brag. Look at me. I was right about him not playing. I think it was just the context clues and the breadcrumbs that were repeatedly dropped led you there. And remember, from the very beginning, we were viewing the Minnesota game as the most optimistic return date. So these other two games, I don't know, in my estimation anyway, were never even in play, at least in Jordan's mind. And so the fact that it kind of played out this way, you know, I understand that there was probably some frustration among the coaches. You know, I think Matt LaFleur was really worried that we were going to get to this game and they were sitting at 0-3 because he didn't know that Malik Willis was going to be able to do what he did. You know, hope is not a strategy. He was hoping that they could survive without his guy.
Totally.
And I would argue that they more than survived. They thrived, and now they played it, you know, whether they wanted to or not, played it safe with their star, and now he's in a much better place to play than he would have been had you rushed him back out there in a brace against Indianapolis or against the Tennessee Titans. And look, I'm sorry, this team, this is not, you know, this ain't Ashwaubenon High School's pass rush that's coming down the street on Ridge Road to face them. Like, these guys lead the league in sacks, and your quarterback, while most likely healthy enough to play, probably not nearly as mobile as he would be. Now I sound like Bane. This bomb is mobile. but mobile. He's not as mobile as he would be if he was 100% healthy. So this is still a challenging deal for him, and I'm eager to see how it plays out.
I'll tell you what, Jason, former Ashwaubenon coach Mark Jonas brings one heck of a pass rush. So, I mean, that sounded like quite a shot at the Jaguars, but that's neither here nor there.
They had a tough go on homecoming, 49-6 loss to Bayport on homecoming. And they had a couple of like touchdown, kickoff, turnover, touchdown type situations. Good. So they were 3-0. They were 3-0. Now they've lost back-to-back games. So go Jaguars.
Well, that tells you how good Bayport is. All right, that's your high school football talk for the time being. I obviously want to talk about how big this game is coming up this weekend, but I do want to reflect briefly on hopefully all we see Malik Willis this year, at least coming from me as a Packers fan. I would like to see my $55 million quarterback the rest of the way. Malik Willis goes 2-0, at least we assume for now, in his two starts this season. I understand they were against worst teams in the league in Indianapolis and Tennessee, but on the short time he was a Packer, to do what he did and to be as efficient as he was as the quarterback is pretty remarkable. And I know we've given so many flowers to Matt LaFleur for the game plans he drew up the last 2 weeks, but what Malik Willis was able to accomplish is an unbelievable comeback story for a guy that was a day two pick, was given up on by the team that drafted him, and then just a few short weeks later is starting and winning against said team that gave up on him. What a run by Malik Willis over the course of the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I don't know how I'm supposed to add that to you, to what you said. Like, you know, you like to always tell me that's a really good point by you. Hey, that was a really good soliloquy by you.
Thanks, man.
First of all, like, I don't know how many other instances there are of backup quarterbacks of whom there was so little expected delivering what he delivered, right? Like, look, there's other teams that go the veteran backup routes, and so they've got guys that have been starters in the league before, and you expect them to play at a pretty decent level. The way things played out in Tennessee, and look, I don't know Amy Strunk, their owner, or any of the people over there. I know a couple guys in PR that are really good dudes. But like, they did not do right by Malik Willis, right? They had a GM change. The new GM picks Will Levis, who maybe Will Levis turns things around, but Will Levis stinks right now.
Yeah.
And you know, the head coach, you know, yelling profanities at him as he comes off the field. Like, that's a pretty dysfunctional deal over there. And, you know, the biggest thing for me was seeing Taylor Lewan go on Barstool and basically say what a nice guy Malik Willis is, but he doesn't know ball. It would appear he knows some ball, and maybe the ball that he was being taught wasn't the right ball for him. But again, I did a story in the State Journal earlier in the week, in talking with Malik and talking with Adam Stenovich and Tom Clements and Jordan Love about the value of sitting. You know, Tausch loves to talk about how valuable that is. Most teams don't have the luxury to do that with a guy, but the Titans were in that position, right? They had Tannehill his rookie year. They had Tannehill last year, but they changed GMs, and the new guy liked Will Levis better, and so they drafted him. But I would have loved to have seen if they had had a succession plan, and Malik Willis sits for two straight years behind Ryan Tannehill, who's not Aaron Rodgers, and then is the Titans starter this year. Based on what we saw from two games, I feel fairly confident that the Titans would be better with Malik Willis having sat as their starter now than where they're at with Will Levis. And I think Tausch's plan was to now trade him back to the Titans for a fourth round pick. I don't think that's going to occur, but he deserves a lot of credit. Like, you're right. A lot of people gave the coaching staff credit, including me, but the player deserves credit too. And LaFleur always says, doesn't matter how great your game plan is, it's the players that bring it to life. And in a big way, Malik Willis brought his game plan to life.
That's a really good point by you, Jason. Well said. on Malik Willis. You're very welcome. How about the other side of the ball? I mean, for a team that had 7 interceptions last year to get up to, what is it now, 6 interceptions through 3 weeks?
No, they've got 7.
Do they have 7? Okay. I was at the game, so I wasn't staring at the box scores this past weekend too much in Nashville. So they're up to 7 interceptions, which is what they had a year ago through 3 weeks. They lead the league in turnovers. Xavier McKinney has 3 interceptions in 3 weeks as a Packer, which is the most interceptions for a player in the league. We talked about it a little bit last week. All offseason, Jeff Hafley was emphasizing takeaways. You get what you emphasize, you get what you tolerate. The Packers are certainly emphasizing and tolerating turnovers, if that makes sense. What do you make once again? Yeah, ignore it. I tried something, it didn't work. I asked you the same question last week. I'll ask it again this week. Through 3 weeks, what do you make of the Jeff Hafley defense? Because it certainly seems now that it is living up to the hype, despite playing, like I said before, some not so great offenses the last few weeks.
Yeah, look, let's see what they do Sunday. Let's see what they do with some better offenses. But they certainly are better. I mean, you can't, even looking at the Eagles game, you still had to say they were better, right? Like, that's a really good offense. Now, they have been inconsistent since Brazil offensively themselves, the Eagles have. But I don't have any doubt that this scheme is a better fit. And yes, did it become, you know, a jailbreak, as Dom Capers would say, getting after the quarterback? I mean, the last 3 or 4 times that Will Levis was sacked, it felt like they were having a team meeting at the quarterback. Like, there were like 3 guys every time. So it's, you know, consider the opponent, but don't downgrade them significantly for the opponent. Like, they are playing this vision and break defense where they're not always locked in on man-to-man. They do still play man-to-man, but the whole idea is so they could see the ball coming out. And some of those Xavier McKinney interceptions, I mean, the one against the Colts for sure, I mean, if he doesn't have eyes to the quarterback, he doesn't see, you know, Anthony Richardson airmailing that throw, and he's not there to intercept it, right? And so, you know, there are components of this defense that are allowing them to do. Also, the sacks, we'll see what it looks like on Sunday. This is a really good offensive line that the Vikings have. It's one of the reasons why Sam Darnold is thriving. If they're able to get after him, then we start to have a little more conversation about their pass rush. You know, the argument that they were going against 2 mobile or mobile quarterbacks was fair. That was not inaccurate. My only point after those 2 games was those guys still get sacked too, and you didn't generate pressure when there were maybe some in the pocket opportunities to do it. So this, everything is trending up with that group. This is what I expected when they didn't play anybody in preseason, that it would take them some time to kind of find their footing. It looks like they have, and there are really encouraging signs. I don't want to sound like Aaron Rodgers after, was that the opener in like 18 or 19 where he said, "We got a defense." I'm not ready to say that yet, but it looks like they probably have a defense.
It certainly looks like they have a defense, but I would like to see it, to your point, against some better offenses. Now, it's still NFL offenses. It is still impressive what they've been able to accomplish through 3 weeks. But look, Tennessee might be a team that's looking to draft Deion Sanders' kid, number 1 overall in the NFL draft, so or an offensive lineman because they need several. So we will see. But this is a really important matchup on Sunday at Lambeau Field. The Vikings, I think, was a team everybody, including you and me, thought would be at the bottom of the NFC North this year. I certainly thought Chicago would be better than they have been through 3 weeks. And I thought Minnesota would probably be a 6-7 win team at the bottom of the NFC North. They are 3-0. They have wins over San Francisco and Houston. They look like a serious contender through 3 weeks. They look for real. That defense is led by Brian Flores, the defensive coordinator, the former head coach, and he's debatably the best D coordinator in all of football. Sam Darnold is having a rejuvenation of sorts in Minnesota. He leads the league with 8 touchdown passes through 3 weeks. What do you make of what's going on over in Minnesota? Because I don't think either of us expected this, at least this early in the season.
No, I definitely didn't, but I do think it's important to note that this happens every year, right, with somebody. Packers were that team last year. They didn't come out of the chute this way, but they made the playoffs in a rebuilding year that no one expected, right? And, you know, this is obviously a Vikings is in transition, but, you know, he's not quite as handsome as Matt LaFleur, but Kevin O'Connell knows what he's doing. He's a good offensive mind. He's from that Sean McVay tree. And to your point about Sam Darnold, it kind of goes back to our conversation with Malik Willis. Like, you know, look at what's happened with the Jets, right? I mean, they took Geno Smith. He was there for 3 years. No, they weren't happy with him. He was a disappointment. They cut him loose. He kind of rediscovers himself in Seattle, right? They draft Sam Darnold. He starts for 3 years. He's not good enough in New York either. He ends up bouncing around San Francisco, Carolina. Now he seems to have found his footing with J.J. McCarthy out for the year. Like, he's playing pretty darn good football. I don't know if Zach Wilson is next on the hit parade, but this goes back to what we were saying about Willis, which, you know, you get in a bad situation, you're with a bad team, you don't play at a high level, you get people change their minds about you. What do you do about it, and how do you rescue your career? Baker Mayfield's doing it, right, in Tampa. I mean, there's a lot of examples of guys that maybe they were more talented than they got credit for when they were with their original team. So the Sam Darnold story is fantastic. I really like Kevin O'Connell as a coach. I think he, you know, coaches, when you make a coaching change, it's always the opposite of the last guy. So when Mike Sherman was fired, Mike McCarthy was a little more player friendly, right? Mike Sherman was more like a stern dad. When they had Mike Tice in Minnesota, they fired him, and because he was too loosey-goosey, they brought in Brad Childress, right? Mike Zimmer was a total hard ass, was not very nice to his quarterback. So they brought in Kevin O'Connell, who built a relationship with Kirk Cousins. So he's the right fit for this team. And Brian Flores, who definitely is not very nice to his players, apparently, according to Tua, at least as a head coach, has his defense playing its tail off for him. So they've got a lot of really good pieces. They've improved defensively. You know, they do have Justin Jefferson, who I think is a pretty good player. And then this running back that they picked up in free agency, can't remember his name,
but yeah,
he's
never
a pretty
heard
good
of him.
Player. You know, older guy, but still pretty impressive. Oh, Aaron Jones. Yeah, Aaron Jones, who, you know, God bless him. He's trying really hard this week to make it clear that he loves everybody back in Green Bay. I feel fairly confident that he doesn't love Goody and he doesn't love Russ Ball. He may love everybody else, but you don't think he wants to come in here and show them that they erred in their decision to make a insulting pay cut offer to him? You bet your bottom dollar he wants to come in and play well.
That's the perfect transition into four downs, where I write four questions for Jason. He has not seen them. He doesn't know what's coming, but
yes,
clearly he knows what's coming on first down. No, that's on Sundays, Jason. Yes or no with Jason Wilder.
Oh, and I don't play it that way. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. You don't say those words. You're allergic to them. Let's go to four downs. Let's start with down one, which includes that Minnesota running back, Aaron Jones. Each year, the media up in Green Bay, the beat writers, and I know something you're really proud to take part of every year, is giving out the Tom Mulhern Stand-Up Guy Award, which you gave to Aaron Jones last year. He's one of the recipients just last year. Your relationship as a media member with Aaron Jones, I'm curious, because he seems like the nicest guy. He wrote a piece this week in the Players Tribune, as you just referenced, saying how much he loved Green Bay, saying no G on the helmet this week, but always in his heart. What was your relationship like with the Minnesota Vikings running back?
Yeah, also on his knee. He has a Packers G tattoo on his knee.
Oh, Brett Bielema style, because Bielema, when he was the head coach of the Badgers, had that Iowa tattoo.
Yeah, I don't know enough about tattoo removal. I don't know if he went through that process or not, but yeah, he got it a couple of years ago. Look, there's a couple of things. First, I always try to treat players with respect, you know, understanding what they put themselves through, understanding where some of them had to come from to get here, and the risks that they take, obviously, with the, you know, the CTE and all the dangers that come with playing football that they're aware of now and that they still sign up for. But I always try to be respectful, but I do appreciate it when I am in turn treated with respect. And Aaron Jones always did that with me. And anytime I needed him, if it was for a one-on-one for 2 minutes, he never once turned me down. And so those are the kind of the building blocks of a working relationship with a player. You know, we're going to, by this post, we'll have already hopefully had him on, but we've got Charles Woodson coming on today, and he has become a friend, and I think the world of him. And he's probably going to get after me for suggesting that Xavier McKinney in some way has some similarities to him. Although with 3 interceptions in 3 games, that's the kind of thing that Charles Woodson would do. But my point is that, you know, Aaron Jones, he's one of those guys that I think everyone who covers the team would say that they had a really good relationship with him. There was one guy that I do remember pissed him off, and we were all kind of in awe. Like, boy, what do you have to do to get on the wrong side of Aaron Jones? So again, you know, we're not friends with these guys, certainly not when we're covering them. But he typifies the Mully Award. He is undeniably a stand-up guy, and even he's one of those guys too. And I, you know, you have people that you work with in at whatever walk of life that it's never their fault. And then there's guys that will take the blame even when it's not their fault, just to shield others around them. And he's the latter. Even if it wasn't his fault, it was his fault. And I always thought that was an interesting difference with some other people.
I am still, I don't want to say upset, because that's not the right word, but I'm still a little surprised by how the Aaron Jones situation was handled.
Disappointed?
Disappointed might be the right word, because he's such a Packer, right? Like, he just epitomizes the G&G so well. And obviously how it went down. I still view it as an upgrade at the running back position, bringing in Josh Jacobs. But as a Packers fan, there's still a bit of sourness there, because he is that dude. I mean, you just, how can't you love Aaron Jones?
I hope it's not toward him, though.
No.
Right?
No.
Like, you know, look, I know we, you know, we're up against the clock of your free Zoom videos.
Yes.
But I do think it's important to say, you know, for everything that Goody has done right, and there's a ton, there is no denying that there's a ton. And frankly, it's possible that the decision to not have Aaron Jones back, ultimately, is the right decision, too. I'm not, that's not what I'm saying. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers' argument that Goody is not great about personal relationships with players is undeniably true, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and again, his job is to win a Super Bowl. And if he does that, you know, it's okay that he's, you know, Brad Pitt in Moneyball. But the bottom line is that Aaron Jones, as he said yesterday to Twin Cities reporters, somebody asked him, you know, what were his feelings the last time he left the building? And he was on, he's like, well, last time I left the building, I thought I was coming back. So, you know, the one thing Goody has done that players, we were just talking about respect, like to offer Jordy Nelson 1 year, $2 million when he's under contract for far more is disrespectful. To offer Aaron Jones what they offered him was disrespectful. And maybe he does it knowing they'll say no, and then it's on them, kind of like the offer to Davante Adams on his way out the door after your opening offer had been $17 million a year. Like, again, don't get it twisted. Goody has done an impeccable job of building this roster. He has made vastly more correct decisions than incorrect decisions. But his business is business, and the lack of personal connectivity is clearly one of his, you could argue, shortcomings, as I would, or you could argue that it's part of what makes him a really good GM. But the bottom line is Aaron Jones deserved better. He didn't get better, but he deserved better.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. And to the point on Goody, Can it be both? Can it be a shortcoming, but also what makes him good? I don't know if it can be both, but it seems like it works in that favor for him.
Seems like it. Yep.
When it comes to some of the questionable decisions, at least for you and me. Anyway, let's move on to second down. Rookie quarterback play. I'm intrigued by your thoughts on it. Jaden Daniels looked terrific on Monday night for the Commanders. Caleb Williams has not looked terrific, and that is not fully all his fault for the Chicago Bears. And Bo Nix has kind of been up and down through 3 weeks. Rookie quarterback play is always fascinating to me because in Green Bay we've seen guys sit for years and get groomed to become that next guy, and it's seemingly worked really well at least the last 2-3 decades. Jaden Daniels, though, looking terrific in Washington this week. Caleb Williams just hasn't looked that way yet for the Bears, a team I think you and I both thought could be close to a playoff team this year. What do you make of rookie quarterback play through the first 3 weeks?
Yeah, this is what rookies do, right? I mean, this is the reality. I would guess that Jaden Daniels will have some rough games ahead. And this, you know, I kind of got after Tausch a little bit about it too. Like, this is the, what I don't like about the realm of sports commentary in today's NFL and in today's sports in general. Well, now we got to crown Jaden Daniels because he was so awesome. Like, look, the last two games, he's completing like 80% of his passes. Like, don't get me wrong, he's playing great. And, you know, a good friend of mine is their defensive coordinator, Joe Witt, and I want to see the Commanders do well. I just don't like, let's get off the roller coaster, right? Like, you could say what you just said about how he played really well on Monday night without having to crown him as, oh, the Bears are probably sitting there going. Now, again, I bet Bears fans are thinking, oh my God, did we pick the wrong guy? Right? I understand that. I'm not saying they shouldn't feel that, but let's, I know this is a dated reference from when you were like, teenager or maybe even younger, but let's slow our roll a little bit and just hold off on major proclamations. Jaden Daniels, you know, look, his journey to the NFL, I mean, he was at Arizona State, he transferred out. I saw something on social media after that game where, like, there was a clip of the locker room at Arizona State where guys were like taking apart his locker and talking about how he sucked.
Yeah,
like, you know, there are ups and downs in everyone's journey. Is he going to have some still ahead? I feel very confident that he will. Will he ultimately be better than Caleb Williams? I have no idea. But I know this. We have plenty of evidence now that when guys have a chance to either sit before they play or sit and hit the reset button before they play somewhere else, they're able to have success. We'll see. Justin Herbert had a lot of success playing right away. He's had some ups and downs since, but he's a pretty darn good quarterback. So it doesn't mean you have to sit to succeed. And maybe Jaden Daniels would be one of those guys that succeeds without sitting first.
Hey, to go back to our conversation with Malik Willis, situations certainly matter. Look at Justin Fields, who is 3-0 with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So it will be an interesting journey for Caleb Williams, but it's still very, very early to tell on all those guys. I will not make the proclamation that Jaden Daniels is him. Like some have.
Exactly the proclamation that irritated me.
Yeah.
That's the one. With the capital H, which I always thought was reserved for God, but apparently now we're doing it for...
Well, I think it's capital H, capital I, capital M. I think it's all capitalized.
It's all the way through.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, okay. Yes.
So I think it's a fully...
Oh, praise the Lord.
All caps word, yeah. Praise the Lord indeed. Third down. Offensive penalties have been kind of... if we're going to pick out a negative over the two wins in a row... Offensive penalties would be the negative I'd pick out. Rashid Walker is a guy that fascinates me, Jason, because it's not that he's done a bad job. It's just that he has 6 penalties on the year, including 4 this past weekend, or 4 holding penalties, rather, and 6 overall, which is a team high. He didn't really have competition at that left tackle position in the preseason, and I'm not calling for his job, but it's certainly something you'd like to see cleaned up. How do you clean that up, offensive penalties?
Technique. I think it's interesting that I've heard that now from Brian Bulaga. I've heard that from Matt LaFleur. Heard it from Elton Jenkins when I asked him yesterday about... because, look, Rashid Walker is a conscientious guy. But he doesn't want to be getting six penalties, right? Like, he cares about it. It's not like he, you know, now he did not appreciate questions about the penalties. He was polite about it, but he was like, I don't want to talk about that. You know, let's talk about, ask me something else. And so I did. And then I said, all right, you can tell me to go to hell, but I have to ask. I circled back to it with him. And I said, like, I asked one question on it. And again, it is about technique. I mean, he's been a little bit sloppy with his hands. And I also think he got hosed on one call. And I think there was one play where he wasn't expecting Josh Jacobs to go the direction he did. And he got caught in a bad spot. So it's not all his fault, but you can't win that way. They did, but you can't. And so he understands he's got to be better. And, but again, I agree. Like, it's not like he's a bad player, but this is the problem with playing offensive line. Like, if you play wide receiver and you run 15, either bad routes or you run the wrong route, but the ball doesn't come to you, nobody knows that you screwed up on that play. If you play offensive line, you give up a sack or a quarterback hit, or you get a penalty, the other 60 plays where you did your job, nobody knows. They know about the three where you screwed up. Mm-hmm. And so that's what he's kind of dealing with right now. I don't think he's played poorly. I don't think he's played great. But again, I rely on Bulaga because he has forgotten more about offensive line play than I will ever know. And he's been fine, but he's gotten a lot of penalties. So the concentration all week long has been keeping your hands inside the framework and those types of fundamental aspects of playing offensive line. And we'll see if it works and improves. Because, look, you know, I made my Ashwaubenon Jaguars joke. I might actually use that in my story now that I think about it. Because this is – they have their work cut out for them. They have a less than ideally mobile quarterback, and they have a good front coming after them. So he has to be on his game. And getting penalties that'll put you in first and 20 or second and 18, and then you've got Jordan Love trying to buy time to go down the field to pick those up, That's a recipe for getting your guy hurt again.
Yeah, you're totally right on that. And my reason in bringing it up is you're going to win against the Titans if that happens. I don't know if you're going to win against the Vikings if that happens. So
not the way the Vikings are playing right now. No, you're not going to win.
Absolutely right. Fourth down for you. Speaking of the Vikings and speaking of the Packers, there's a little bit of a personal rivalry between two of their players that we have not seen on the field since 2022. That would be Packers cornerback Jaire Alexander and Vikings wide receiver Justin Jefferson. Those two have had a long-running rivalry that we didn't get to see on the field last year. In my opinion, Jason, this is one of the better, I'm going to use the term beefs, we've seen in some time, at least when it comes to the Packers. Is this the matchup you're most excited to see Sunday, Jefferson and Jaire?
So do we think, like, do they dislike each other?
I think they respect each other. I don't think they like each other, if that makes sense.
Jaire has not talked yet this week. If when he does talk, it's usually on Friday. I am curious what his personal feelings are for him because, yeah, when he was mad after the opener in 2022 that he didn't get the match up on him, and that was the beginning of the end for him and Joe Barry. Like that was he never recovered from that. And then he did the gritty.
Yep. Oh, there you go, Jason. Nice.
You didn't see the footwork. It was pretty suspect. But, you know, when he did that at the game in Green Bay that later that season, yeah, I could see why that would. You know, look, it is a great matchup. We were robbed of that. I just think it'll be really interesting to see, you know, again, in this defense, we're going to talk to Jeff Hafley later today. You know, I don't know what his philosophy is on, you know, guys traveling.
That's a good point.
Receivers. So what, you know, is it going to be Carrington Valentine? Is he going to be back? Is it going to be Eric Stokes sometimes? Is it going to be like, again, they don't play strict man-to-man coverage either. So I don't know exactly what it's going to look like. I have to figure out how I ask that question without sounding like I'm trying to get the game plan from him. So we'll have to wait and see how that goes over.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really – we'll see shades of it at the very least, if not a game-long matchup between those two. But hopefully the gritty is broken back out as the Packers win, but we will see. It's Packers-Vikings Sunday at Lambeau at noon. Jason and I are with you even more beginning at 9 a.m. on Green Bay Game Day. Jason joins us for the 10 o'clock hour across ESPN Wisconsin and on YouTube. Jarrett Bush, Gabe Neitzel will be with us just outside of Lambeau Field. Jason, looking forward to catching up more on Sunday. Your gritty was really good. I was impressed by the ability to gritty on this week's edition of Weekly Wildy, or what'd you call it at the beginning?
Off schedule.
Off schedule, just like we are right now. Jason, we'll talk to you next week.
No, you'll talk to me on Sunday.
I'll talk to you on Sunday. We'll talk to you on this platform.
And then we'll talk next week.
Next week. All right, whatever. No. It's Weekly Wildy. We're back with you each Thursday at 12 o'clock on the ESPN Milwaukee YouTube channel and available wherever you get your podcasts. Green and Gold Fix podcast feed, the Jason Wildy podcast feed, the Mr. Irrelevant podcast feed, and every Saturday morning on 1430 ESPN. Beaver Dam, we'll talk to you next week. Peace.